www.mediafree.tvpodcastnetwork.
Tonight, you will be expected to perform your wifely duties. I mention because it was difficult for me with the tentacles.
I don't have tentacles.
Your husband will have tentacles.
Are you trying to say testicles?
I don't know. Just leave your eggs on the nightstand and get out of there.
This is the Extra Hot Great Podcast, episode 216 for the week of August 27th, 2018. I am Onion Julius customer David T. Cole, and I'm here with contouring leech Sarah D. Bunting,
beauty is pain,
egg-laying step queen Tara Ariano,
blah,
and peer-pressuring personal demon Omar Gallega.
Do it, do it, do it, do it.
Welcome, everybody, to another week of Extra Hot Great. I am your host, David T. Cole. I do have a frog in my throat for some reason as we start this, but let's just continue on, persevere. Our guest this week is none other than our good friend Omar. Welcome, Omar.
Hello.
Hi, Omar.
Hi, Omar.
Yay! Thanks for having me.
Now, this week we are talking about the new Matt Groening animated feature on Netflix called Disenchantment. Not Disenchanted, excuse me. I will probably call it Disenchanted a few times during this recording. I have called it Enchantment, Enchanted, Disenchanted, and then finally correctly Disenchantment in our conversations.
You also called it a feature when it's a series.
Let's throw it to our guests first. Overall impressions of the first season of Disenchantment, sort of a medieval skinned Futurama setup, in my opinion. But Omar, what are your high level takes on Disenchantment?
I went through various stages because I really was wanting to love this. I had high hopes for it when they first announced it. And it doesn't feel like it was that long ago that they announced it. Was it just like this year that they said they were doing this? I didn't even hear about it until a few months ago.
Yeah, it was definitely same. Felt like it was a skunk work project.
Yeah. So, I mean, my hope was that it was going to be more kind of life in hell than Simpsons and Futurama, that it would be sort of, you know, Netflix would sort of free these writers up to do something a little bit more adventurous and interesting. And I watched the whole season thinking, you know, this is going to take a turn. And some of the reviews I read seemed to suggest that it would get better as it went. And it just doesn't have enough laughs in it. It doesn't have enough jokes, enough humor. It's paced really slow compared to other shows. And I feel like, and I know, you know, this panel is not super huge fans of Rick and Morty, but I feel like if you're going to do a show, an animated show for adults right now, it has to be at least at that level or higher. You know, like that, there's a few animated shows that have changed the game the last few years. And if it's not of that quality of, you know, of smarts and quality animation or better, then like, why even bother? So it's a disappointment. It's weird. And I wanted to like it. I thought the animation was fine. I thought some of the character voices are good, but it never really coheres as a good story. And the characters are really bland, especially the lead, the Abby Jacobson character, Princess Tiabini, it just feels like there's just a black hole of charisma around that character, just the writing of it.
Yeah.
So I kept wanting it to get better. I kept wanting it to take a turn, and I will probably watch another season of it if it gets renewed, just because I feel like I put this much time into it.
Omar, love yourself enough not to watch another season of the show if you already don't like it.
You know, but you know, at the beginning, I thought it started off with some promise, and that it did feel more like life in hell to me than like latter day Simpsons or Futurama. It did have kind of a meaner tone to it, and people actually die and get stabbed, and you know, it's a little bit more violent, but it doesn't really kind of fulfill the promise of putting Matt Groening on Netflix and letting him go nuts. He never goes nuts.
They don't even swear. Like, I feel like that's the basic what you would hope for from a show like this, like, as you say, Matt Groening on Netflix, and then to not even let them say bad words is like really dumb and ridiculous. I mean, I suppose the point is like, well, it's supposed to be somewhat family friendly, but like, someone gets impaled through the head in the premiere.
I think there's one Eric Andre, like, goddamn, like toward the end of the season. And that's about as dirty as it gets.
Yeah, I agree with you. The pacing is super slow. And I didn't really like pin that as a problem until we had watched the last of the ones we watched. We watched 6 out of 10. Mm-hmm. And it's like, for a show like this, there's just no reason that it can't be, there can't be the joke per minute rate that The Simpsons had in its heyday, or Futurama for that matter. And the fact that so many of these writers are also Futurama writers, it's like, why would you bring over all of these people that were presiding over Futurama and it's like crap, increasingly crappy final seasons? Because like it just kept, you know, from the time that they brought it back, it just really kept getting worse and worse and flabbier and saggier. And like, when you can watch an Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt that has so many more jokes like this and does not feel bound by the limitations of writing for human beings that need to act in like recognizably human ways, like it just could be so much sillier than it is. And it's not. And I agree with you too about the characters. Like, they have changes of heart that just come out of nowhere. Like, I still don't know what the point of Bean's character is. Like, it seems like they start her out where she's already kind of like, in quotation marks, bad. Like, she's, you know, in a bar drinking and stuff. And then they add the personal demon, like making her make more bad choices. Like, how much of this is supposed to be her and how much of it is supposed to be Lucy? Like, I just, it does not feel well thought through. Sarah, what were your thoughts?
I loved it.
My notes are basically, yeah, no, not really. Bean is, I think, the biggest problem, and it's why I didn't watch past. Like, I got halfway into the second episode and was like, I'm set.
I had a bet with myself how far you got in episode two. Full was my guess, but.
Okay. Wow. Yeah, close. But I was kind of like, you know, it's only another like 10 minutes, but it's also like I could be spending that 10 minutes doing something else. So yeah. I did.
Sure.
Because it's not.
Watching Below Deck, no doubt.
Yes. In fact, spoiler, I don't dislike it, but I got what it was and what it's trying to do in the first 5 minutes, and I was all set. And the main characters, like you said, the animation of the little demon is super cute and reminds me of those little Japanese soot demons. Kind of. They're like really cute. I forget what they're called. They used to have a t-shirt.
There's a video game series called Patapon, and he looks like one of those guys from there too.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, with those angles. Yeah.
But like everything that was interesting was sort of happening around the edges and was jokes. Even some of the voices sounded very similar to characters on The Simpsons, which I'm not even as immersed as you guys are, but that was like distracting.
Well, they actually have one character who has the exact same voice in the exact same role between Futurama and this show. She's the Smizmar Futurama. Yes. And I forget what her name is in this one, but she has the exact same voice and the exact same role to fill. And I was like, oh, okay. It's like, you can just mix it up a little bit. Yeah.
And the king is basically Bender.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But Bean is sort of Bendery too.
The dwarf names are funny, and there's like a funny gag in the first episode that's like, no one has ever left, not even Levo, and no one's ever come back, not even Returno. But then why wouldn't you have, like, given that you're doing that much humor about the names, why don't you have one named Fucko? Come on.
It's right Netflix. There.
Yeah, it's Netflix.
That character that you're talking, the sole shtick was, well, I want the, you know, give myself permission to be unhappy. This is all just forced happiness here in Elfland. And then they drop that conceit right away as soon as episode one is over. And then his thing, he's just in love with Bean. And that's his shtick, which is unfortunate because that could have been.
Well, that shtick was like sort of funny that he's like, what's war? And then he's like, now we're meeting new people. Like, I thought that was funny. But if, you know, once it was clear that he just has a crush on Bean, it's like, why?
Yeah.
He's with Tess now. She's too tall for him. Like, I don't. I had enough in 10 minutes. And again, it wasn't like aggressively bad. It's just like, guys, peak TV. You have to have better joke density than this.
That's the thing. Yeah.
One other issue I think with it is that it's episodic, that it's telling a season long story instead of standalone episodes. And it gets much more that way toward the end of the season where there's more cliffhangers and it gets very Game of Thronesy toward the last couple of episodes of a lot of just stacking the plot on it. And there's a reversal and this character comes back and there's this and like it turns it and it strips the jokes away. Like there's no laughs in all of that. It just turns into a straight on adventure story
and
wanting you to feel sorry for them and give, you know, feel some sympathy for these characters that they really haven't earned by that point even.
Well, and like, how can you do a cliffhanger when in the first episode, they literally all fell off a cliff and yeah. bounced down it? Like, these are animated characters. Don't, I don't know. Like,
yeah.
Are you actually Red Wedding-ing this? Mm-hmm. Like, don't.
Yeah. And the season ends on some of that, on some like cliffhangers, and like, you know, they seem pretty cocky that they're going to get a second season to resolve all that. It doesn't end in any tidy way.
They did crazy numbers though, apparently. So I'm sure they will.
Oh, did they? Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. And I will probably watch it because I hate myself.
Yeah.
Oh, Omar.
Sorry. One of my problems with this generally is I think they should have got a better voice actor to play the lead. You know, I love her on Broad City. That's a great show, but her delivery for Bean is just so flat, and it doesn't really sell what the character is supposed to be going through. She sounds more bored than exasperated with her life, you know, because a lot hangs on whether you enjoy Bean the character, and she's a hard character to like out of the gate as written. And mm-hmm. then when you sort of on top of that, put a lackluster, you know, performance for the voice acting on top of that, it's not great.
It's not like she can't do it because she also voices Sneaky Patty on Pickle and Peanut, where she's very good.
Yeah.
But I think that, you know, what Dave is pointing to as a problem with her voice is also a problem with the character. Like, I don't know if I were her, what you even could cling to with this character to like develop, because she's so changeable from episode to episode, and like indecisiveness is one of her only consistent character notes. Like, she's so hard to root for because she's so blah. And I don't know if that's like, definitely the voice performance contributes to that, but I don't know if that's a symptom of it or the cause of it.
They can't seem to figure out what her relationship is with the dad, with the king. Like, one episode she hates him and wants to get out of, from under his thumb. One episode you think that, oh, they're kind of, you know, bonding now, and, you know, things are, you know, the relationship's kind of mended. And then no, it's back to being, you know, her bratty and him, you know, after her. It never resolves. That never gets fixed by the end of the season. And I think with her character, like, they can't quite figure out if she's supposed to be like a bad girl, or right. is she supposed to be like just, you know, the damsel princess archetype, that she just wants her freedom, but then she has a lot of freedom. She's on the town partying and drinking every night. So like, what's the problem? They can't quite get a fix on that character. And so everything around her kind of gets sucked into that vortex of what is it, what's her purpose and what she's supposed to be doing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's kind of a mess.
Yeah. And I think the trajectory of this is Simpsons. It's still going, but it's been decades since its peak and its strength. And then Futurama, you had a good 2 to 3 seasons right there in the middle, and then they resurrected it, and then it was just bad. And now this one just starting out bad. So I just kind of feel like we're getting quicker to its, you know, its state of inertia. Mm-hmm. But it's interesting that, Tara, you were saying that a lot of the latter-day Futurama people are involved in this. Like, the mm-hmm. biggest mistake with the Futurama revival was basically taking their 2 or 3 hour long story and chopping it up into episodes and putting that out. And that seems to be, Disenchantment seems to be a continuation of that idea. Like, oh, wasn't that fun that we had this long narrative without jokes? You know, right. Or you know, yeah. they don't have the ability, it would seem, to build a long narrative and have the jokes. You know, mm-hmm. Futurama, after its sort of first season jitters, got into a great rhythm where, you know, they had arcs, character arcs, but, you know, they were all just sort of, it was very episodic, but it was incredibly dense and funny. And it's just very surprising that this show with this pedigree still, like, they can't have both at the same time. Like, look at a show like a Netflix show like BoJack Horseman, which
yeah.
has both. Plus, it has, like, moments that I think Disenchantment wants to have, you know, the sort of emotional points, those, you know, that could either knock you out or you know, make you sigh. Mm-hmm. Or even a show like like Big Mouth, which is just incredibly dense and mm-hmm. kind of shocking, and something you couldn't do probably outside of Netflix or a streaming service or you know, a high-end cable channel. Like, these are the opportunities that this show has missed. Mm-hmm. And not that it has to be a clone of any of those shows, but like, it just feels like, you know, like, oh, it's, you know what this is, guys? This is PG-14. You know, like, it's just not there.
Well, at the beginning of the run, the first two or three episodes, I was actually kind of liking the slower pace. Like, I felt like, okay, they're not rushing to tell joke and make it so dense. I kind of enjoyed that it had some breathing space to develop the characters, but then it didn't. I thought I was sort of buying into a show where there was going to be this character development and these better storylines, and then it never gets there. And there's a run of about two or three episodes in the middle that I actually really liked, that I thought got better paced and better as single storylines. But then the end of the season, the last three or four episodes is all one story, and it just really gets baggy, trying to, you know, put all that plot on top of plot. So it almost finds its rhythm in the middle, and then it sort of, I think it kind of loses its way toward the end and just strips all the humor out for in favor of plot and trying to do character development and not quite making it interesting enough. So yeah, it's got problems.
Our Roomba is talking to me, so I have to turn it off.
I was waiting to see if you were going to pause.
I've never heard the Roomba just made like an airport announcement. I don't know what the hell it was saying. Yeah. I had the headphones on, but it was speaking full sentences at me, and I'm a little scared right now. We'll be right back. All right, guys, the Roomba has spoken. We had to put the Roomba outside.
Oh, no.
It's time to go around the dial. Around the dial, sponsored by Roomba. All right, Arianna.
Well, from one unsuccessful Netflix product to one that is lovely, I watched the Netflix feature film To All the Boys I've Loved Before. This is something you may have seen people talking about on your social media. It is based on a young adult novel by Jenny Han. This is the first of three, and I'm sure they'll make the other two based on how much people are going crazy for this. It's extremely cute. The premise is Lara Jean is our heroine. She has a practice when she gets a crush on a boy of writing a letter to him and then putting it away. And at the start of the movie, her oldest sister, Lara Jean is the middle girl of three. Her older sister goes away from their home in Portland to college in Scotland. And everyone is, her dad and her sister are kind of worried that Lara Jean is too interior and is not getting out and having enough fun. And so something happens where all of her letters end up getting sent to their recipients when they were never supposed to see them. And so this sets off a chain of events that throws Lara Jean's life into chaos, but also excitement, because one of them is to a boy whose name is Peter, played by Noah Centineo, formerly of The Fosters, who is in the process of breaking up with his girlfriend, kind of, and maybe it suits his purpose for her to think that they're dating, and for Lara Jean, it serves her purposes for Josh to think that she and Peter are dating, because one of the letters was to Josh, and Josh is her older sister's recent ex-boyfriend. It's all very drama. You know, it's a high school movie, but seeing a movie like this that's so well executed and charmingly acted and beautiful to look at, can go back in the Twitter feed of our friend Sophia Ray, SOPIARAI, on Twitter and see sort of her mood board of like what particular shots look like and like the color choices of composition of these various moments. It's lovely. The leads are so cute together. I thought Noah Centineo from The Fosters was fucking terrible. He is the second Jesus of two. He replaced the other guy when I don't know what happened to him. He got all the worst storylines, and I just assumed it was because he couldn't act, and he still is not like really maybe have a huge amount of range, but to play boy you have a crush on when you're a junior in high school, like, he's perfect, and everyone is going crazy, and all of the women who are my age or around my age are like Googling him to make sure that it's not gross for them to think he's cute. It's fine, he's of age. The movie is like such a throwback to the great ones of the 80s. There's even a scene of Peter and Lara Jean watching 16 Candles together, and her having to him objecting to the character of Long Duk Dong and asking, like, isn't this kind of racist? And she's Asian. She's like, yeah, it's super racist, but how can you fight with this movie when, you know, the Michael Shefflin character is so cute? Like, I get it. This is one that's going to hold up a lot better 30 years from now than 16 Candles probably does overall. So if you're in the mood for an extremely light, sweet, high school set romantic comedy that does everything right, 100% I recommend to all the boys I've loved before. And if you have Netflix, you already have it. Lucky you. And get in on it now before they inevitably make the sequels into movies as well. And for my plug, I will just reiterate what we said last week, which is Sarah and I are taking turns recapping in epic old school recap form, Better Call Saul at previously.tv. So you can check us out on alternating weeks. Sarah is up next on Labor Day. Yay. Well, at least I gave you a screener a day early.
With a 75 minute episode.
Boo. Yeah.
Omar.
Hey, so I was just catching up on Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee, the Netflix run. They had a new season, I guess about a month or two ago, called Freshly Brewed. They don't actually have season numbers because Jerry Seinfeld, I guess, new for 2018. And, you know, it's a good list of comedians. There's Zach Galifianakis, Dave Chappelle, Ellen DeGeneres, Kate McKinnon, most notably, I think, John Mulaney, some of our favorites. But I found watching it, and I didn't actually get through all 12 of them. I bailed before Alec Baldwin and Jerry Lewis, which I thought like unpleasant time with bad coffee people. But I really enjoyed the John Mulaney one. I really enjoyed the Dave Chappelle and the Kate McKinnon. The Kate McKinnon one especially, I think she comes off probably the best of all the ones I saw. But I read a couple of reviews when this came out that kind of came back to me as I was watching it of there's something that's kind of souring about Jerry Seinfeld himself in this show. Yeah, where a few of the comments he makes or kind of the attitude he has about certain things, especially with the younger comedians, like there's a very marked generation gap. And the one I found the most pronounced was with Kate McKinnon, where she's being incredibly charming and funny and real and sweet. But you can kind of see her kind of a little bit wary of some of the things he says and some of the ways he thinks of her and her approach to comedy. It's really kind of off-putting. And I've always admired Jerry Seinfeld. I think he's probably, of every stand-up I've ever seen in my whole life, he hit the highest ratio of jokes to hits when I saw him live. So I think as a craftsman, he's amazing. But there's something about his personality that is not aging well in this era. And that is, the more you watch this show, the less I tend to like him. So it's becoming a problem as I watch this show and dip in and out of it.
Yeah, he strikes me as someone who doesn't think it behooves him to keep up with what's going on in his field. And like, on a certain level, that's true. Like, his show went off the air 20 years ago. Like, he's been a millionaire for a long time. And so I think that makes him sort of out of touch, like in general, but in his field as well.
Yeah, and also he has that sort of dad befuddlement of like, I don't know what the kids are into these days. And I think the Kate McKinnon episode is the one where you see it the most clearly of like, he really doesn't know what to make of her. And you know, as funny and charming as she is, he doesn't quite connect with her, which is sad. But so you can catch it on Netflix if you want to. But I find with that show, it's like, just pick the ones you want to watch. It's not worth trudging through a whole season of it. But, you know, seeing and also all the car bullshit is like, all right, enough with, you know, the chrome bumpers and all this bullshit. Anyway, that's just me. But Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee, it's on Netflix if you would rather watch that than the charming show that Tara just talked about.
Anything to plug there? Oh. You going on tour or anything?
No, I do. You know what? I actually have been doing a project for an insurance company called Texas Mutual out of Texas. I've been doing some radio spots for them, and they kind of like very mini 1 minute podcasts about technology. And they collected all of these and put it on a website called techminutetexas.com. So you can hear me talk about a bunch of different, like 60 different tech topics in under a minute. And I produced all these myself. So yeah, go check that out. Tech Minute Texas. They did a really nice job with the website. I was not expecting it. And they surprised me with this really beautiful website.
So it's cool. Texas tech issues. So stuff like putting RFID chips on cows, that kind of thing.
I was going to say
exactly that, Dave.
Yes.
We'll link it in the show notes as well.
Sorry.
You know that feeling that you get when you put on your winter coat for the first time in like October and you find a $5 bill that you forgot about from like March, the last time you wore it? That is the feeling that I got when I received an email blast from Bravo about Below Deck Mothership season 6 starting in October. And I was like, oh shit, there was a season 5 and I didn't watch it yet. So I'm catching up now. And I mean, look, this is a garbage show starring garbage people. But it's glorious garbage. And Captain Lee is not garbage. And also, I think we might be related because he says, God damn it, the exact same way that my mom and I do. So there appears to be like a genetic component to the swearing that I find appealing. Mm-hmm. In any case, BD is BAC in early October. And if you think I won't be glued to the shit, think again. I'm also glued to the current iteration, Below Deck Med, which is still on. It's like, I think the last charter is this week, and then they're doing a reunion, finally. This franchise often gets shafted on the reunions, but I think finally someone, possibly Andy Cohen, was like, guys, come on. This season has been somewhat trying for Buncey and other emetophobes in the on-screen, well-miked seasickness department. Ooh. But that seems to have died down in the last few episodes. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to the reunion. There won't be any barfing on that, I assume, Knockwood. And I really can't wait to see Chief Stu Hanna trying to basically Teresa Giudice her way out of all the unflattering shit that we saw her do on camera. She's still going to claim didn't happen or was editing or whatever. For my plug. Speaking of Bravo,
so important.
Mark Blankenship and I have a little music podcast called Mark and Sarah Talk About Songs. And now it has a spinoff called Money Can't Buy You Podcast. It features Dan Rogge and Tracy Potocnik, and they talk about the vanity singles of various Real Housewives. And then they reimagine those singles as melancholy folk music. We began as one must with Countess Luann. That is in the main Mastass feed. And you can follow us on Twitter at Talk Songs for all sorts of information. And there will be on the Mastass Patreon page, but available to the public, the syllabus that Dan Rogge sent me in order to prepare for this Real Housewives of New York. It is this just gorgeous gem of writing and roguiness. So listen. Yes, that is Money Can't Buy You Podcast. Mark and Sarah and Dan and Tracy talking about songs in the first episode, and I hope that you will check it out. It is delightful.
It's wonderful. I loved it. It was the highlight of my day yesterday.
Aw.
All that backwards, crazy, funky music means it's time for the No Knack, the evil goateed twin of the canon. This is a submission for a very bad episode of an otherwise quality show. That's the metric of the No Knack. Omar is submitting this week. Take it away, Omar.
Well, I'm here to submit season 2, episode 8 of Detroiters. And that is a show, an episode called Hark Motors. Now, Detroiters is a great comedy. I discovered it through this podcast and loved it. I would go so far as to say it's probably my favorite straight comedy. That is to say, one that's not also doing like dramatic heavy lifting like Atlanta or Insecure. It's probably the show I look forward to watching as soon as it airs the most, as far as just your half hour comedies on basic cable. And this show's second season, which just wrapped up a few weeks ago, was just as strong as its first. I thought it was really good. It didn't rely as much on kind of heavy hitter guest stars. It was able to expand its supporting character universe and its storylines and flesh out its world, which is the city of Detroit, and continue to develop its two main characters, Tim and Sam, who are delightful, which is why it was a shock when this season 2 episode aired on August 2nd of this year, which turned out to be a dark day for television. It was the only Detroiters episode so far that I didn't care, that I not only didn't care for, but that I actively hated. And it's hard to make sense of that because it lands right between Lois, which was a really fantastic episode about the funeral of a family coworker, and God. Little Caesars. Yeah, which was fantastic. And then Little Caesars, which had the great running gag about the giant research lab pizza ball. So this episode, for some reason, it just seems to get the tone of the show all wrong. It veers too far from funny and salty sweet to funny and completely sour and mean. It's like getting a glimpse of an alternate dimension Detroiters where the formula for what makes this show a genuine pleasure just never comes together. So we'll get into it. The episode begins with the two main characters, admin Tim Cramlin and Sam Duvet, standing outside a restaurant where they just took out one of their clients. They run into Ryan Lepchek, one of their rivals from a much more prosperous firm called Donor. He's taken out a client from product placed Quicken Loans. So we'll go to clip one.
Quicken Loans is doing a new national campaign. They're not sure who they're going with yet, but wink, wink.
We'll do it.
Yeah, we're in half price.
No, fellas.
Yeah, guys, it's not.
Rocket Mortgage Pocket Porkages. It's a little pocket for porkages.
Rocket Mortgages, fast like a rocket, introducing your new spokesperson, The Flash.
It's not about speed and more about how our simple process helps you understand everything so you can be confident.
Okay, with all due respect, who is more confident than The Flash, I wonder?
Yeah, he's literally the fastest man alive, so...
They hate Donor, which is a real life ad firm, and that leads to this exchange with a mom and her son who happen to be standing nearby.
Don't say boner in front of a kid.
He didn't say boner, idiot. He said donor.
Stay out of it, dickweed. You're not the one who said boner.
I will say it.
Don't you fucking do it.
I will. Hey, buddy. Boner. Oh,
yeah.
Shit. Freaking husband's a psycho.
You're a psycho. This isn't my husband. This is my son.
Ha ha.
Come on, let's freaking go.
Yeah, so already the tone feels off, and this is before even the credits. Sam is impatient and jerky. Tim is yelling at a kid, and both of them just sound rude and cruel to an innocent client. The next thing Sam does is wrap a rope around the client so she doesn't roll around the back of their van without a seat. We should also note this is the first time we've ever seen this ugly-ass van with their faces painted on the side in the entire run of the series, I think.
That's not true.
Is that true?
It's a plot point in season one.
Oh, okay. No, yeah, I just forgot about that.
Go ahead.
But it feels, I mean, we hardly ever see that van, so it feels like it was inserted just to make a joke about having a client roll around the back of the van tied to a rope. It's not particularly funny or clever or in keeping with the relationship the characters usually have with the people they do commercials for. And it's kind of a downer of a cold open. So next, the boys retreat to Temple Bar, where they see an ad for one of their clients, Dr. Mayflower, a medicinal weight loss guru. But it's not one of their ads. They confront Dr. Mayflower, who tells them that among the many things wrong with the Cramlin advertising ad was that it didn't even list his correct phone number. Somehow the guys are able to blame this on Donor advertising stealing their client. So they storm the office looking for Lepchek. Lepchek lectures them on how advertising is just about winning the game when they spot two other clients being wooed by Donor for no other reason, apparently, than to give their interns some practice material. Tim and Sam are not pleased. Clip three.
Irvin Doris Smith!
Tim, Sam, it was just a meeting. They invited us.
We will talk about it later. Go wait in the car.
We drove here.
Go wait in our car!
So the two take on the strategy of bugging people walking into the Donor building, basically just harassing anyone who walks by and is doing business with them. It's desperate, sad, and annoying, not desperate, funny, and entertaining. They plant their friends in to pretend to be bad security at Donor. Then Sam pretends to get hit by a car and die while pitching his ad services to a person who turns out to be working for Donor. Their last prank, turning the Donor sign into Boner, has an unexpected result. It catches the eye of Alan Hark, a brilliant auto industry pioneer. He jumps into their car to set up a private meeting for a $200 million new project. Hark gives them a little test to see if they're the right guys for the job. Clip four.
Sell me this pencil.
Excuse me?
Sell me the pencil. No problem. No problem at all.
Yeah, here it comes.
Life goes by so fast.
Sell me the pencil. First of all, let's get you a water or something. You thirsty?
Yeah,
the pencil.
Welcome to the Star Store. We've been in business for a little while.
A little while. We're struggling.
I'll sell you my car.
No. Sell me the pencil.
$600. That's what I'm saying. Lease to own. $30 a month. I pay your car insurance.
That's a terrible deal for you.
Is that a yes? Is that a yes?
You know what? This isn't a pencil.
No.
This is a trumpet. Jazz.
Holy...
Whatever. I already own the pencil.
But Hark thinks the guys are hungry and decides on working with them anyway. Sam and Tim go back to Lepchek to rub it in, only to find he's stealing another client of theirs. They call Lepchek a bunch of names, and he tries to reason with them. Clip 5.
You really are a piece of charring horse crap.
I don't know what type of rivalry you think we have, but honestly, I just want the best for you guys.
And we want to kill you. D-E-A-D.
Offensive. I don't come into your office and flip off that nice old lady that sits in that front desk.
She's not nice.
She's not nice. She is old.
She's not nice. Bips.
When Tim and Sam meet with Hark at his luxurious home, they show him a full-page ad they ran to celebrate the partnership, but things get weird really fast. They're asked to wear funky space boots when they meet, and then they meet Hark's barely functioning smart home and his real doll-looking robot maid, slash probably lover. Clip 6.
Let me ask you something, gentlemen. Would you believe she is, in fact, a robot?
Yes.
Yes, I would.
Well, it's because I told you.
No, because had I not used the word robot, you wouldn't have suspected.
It's very, very obvious.
Most men would kill for a wife like that.
Is that your wife?
The face of a Mona Lisa. Brains, too.
Brains and Mona Lisa.
They finally get a look at Alan Hark's futuristic low-emissions car. It looks great, but the emissions are not exactly ready for the road. They look like little sausage roll poops. Clip 7.
That looks like shit.
Well, no. It's emissions. The car shoots out an emissions blob.
So it shits?
I don't think you understand the significance of what I've done here.
You've invented a shitting car.
It's not shit. It's a blob.
Can you make it any other color?
No, I've tried.
Well, it smells like shit.
No, it doesn't.
Then what does it smell like?
Mm-hmm.
All right, look, you've got plenty of money. We can fix this.
The money's gone.
You spent $200 million on a shitting car and a robot with boobs?
Once people start buying the car, there'll be no end of money. We can do this thing together.
Okay, how much do you think people are going to pay for a crapping car?
I was hoping $1.5 million.
Each?
Yeah, the car costs $1.4 million to make.
Their night ruined, Sam and Tim put on their own shoes and leave in a huff, but not before finding out that Lepchek conveniently told Hark about the two of them as a prank, which doesn't really jive with what we saw before in the episode. They confront Lepchek one more time, threatening to steal something from his office and eventually break in a vase. Lepchek just takes it in stride. Clip 8.
Best of luck to you guys.
Eat a butt, Lepchek!
I honestly like those guys.
What?
Nothing to.
And that's the episode. It's not without laughs and funny lines, but something about the ratio of meanness to sweetness is just off in this episode. The lovable best friends we've come to know for two seasons are made to act like whiny, aggressive teen boys hopped up on Call of Duty and Monster Energy drinks. And it's not a good look for Tim and Sam. There are plenty of shows all over broadcast and cable and streaming TV about sarcastic assholes hurling insults at each other. The reason Detroiters works as well as it does is because of that tender friendship between two grown men, because of the show's genuine love of the city of Detroit and its affection for its oddball supporting characters. We get very little of that from this off-brand episode, which makes Sam and Tim come off badly and amps up a rivalry that's one-sided for a whole episode. The donor versus Kremlin storyline is funny in small doses, but a full episode is just bad and totally off the map. I think it's the worst episode of an otherwise fantastic series, and even though we're only two seasons in, I hope it's the only one that will ever have to be considered for the no-neck.
Should I go first?
Sure.
This is an excellent case, Omar. I actually, rewatching it, it was similar to the experience of rewatching the Arrested Development episode that Joe presented for the no-neck a little while ago until Martin Short shows up, and then you're like, oh, right. That's what makes this episode unbearable. This was the same thing. I think there is some funny stuff up until the moment that Alan gets in the car, and then it really does turn. I mean, the cold open is sort of mean, true, but I think that Tim yelling in the kid's face and then getting slapped, it made me laugh. But after that, it is really dumb. Like, it just seems like they had an idea that this guy should be eccentric and then didn't really think through any of it, and all of that, it just is so, it slows down the episode so much. And after the reveal of the shitting car, which is like the shitting car, like this feels like such a South Park joke in that is not a compliment. And then there's more after that. It's just like it feels like they didn't know how to wrap it up. And that at the closing scene in Lebchek's office feels extremely tacked on. And, you know, it doesn't even really tie back into what they were doing to menace him or prank him or bug him earlier in the office. That last scene is really bad. And all the quirks of Hark's house and the robot and the spaghetti and the, you know, going back twice to be like, I guess I'm tired. It's like, it really is bad. And in a totally different bad way than you expect when we get like straight up ad copy from Quicken Loans read to us in the cold open. So yeah, it's hard to argue that this is for sure the worst episode that Detroiters has aired in its 20 episode history. So excellent, excellent case. It's hard to disagree. How about we have Dave next and then Sarah can go last.
All right. I sort of disagree that the sweetness that Sam and Tim. Thank you. Radiate is like a universal thing. Like they are very sweet to each other and they're good friends, but they've consistently been dicks to everybody around them at one point or another. Co-workers, other people, yelling at the baby crib people at Donor is consistent with their first appearance in the first season. They have a mean streak in them. They are not usually mean to each other, except, you know, on those occasions where that is the whole point of the story, is there's some great divide. You know, whether it be ambitions or future plans or whatnot. So I don't think the meanness is necessarily the problem with this episode. But to me, this seems like there was a storyline that came from somewhere else. Like a writer had this idea for some other show or some skit. And it was kind of like hammered into Detroiters. The scene where you first see Hark as he jumps into their car, like that scene makes no sense to me, because like he comes in, he's like, sell me this pencil. And they just putter around and make fools of themselves trying to sell this pencil. And it's like, well, that's all right. That makes no sense in the story. And then the whole thing with you go back to Hark's house and it's sort of like it is the computer home automation level jokes of like, that is so stupid. Oh, my God. .com jokes of the late 90s and early aughts. Like it's very lazy, right? Mm-hmm. And yeah, the South Park shitting card is right on. But I don't kind of feel like this was tonally off for the show. I don't think this is like the mean-spirited alternate goateed universe Detroiters. I think it was just the whole Hark storyline was a mistake and it seemed to come out of the blue. Like them canvassing people coming into the Donor complex, you know, to sell their ad company was actually pretty funny.
Hey, what's up, dudes? Hey, you heading into Donor?
Oh, yes, we are.
Ah, too bad.
Excuse me?
Oh, it's just I heard you can get better service and a lower price at a place called Kremlin Duvet.
Kremlin Duvet. Thanks for the tip, but I think we're good.
Ah, Donor sucks, sir.
Seems like you suck.
Yes.
Do I suck?
No, man, no. It's just he came up with it so fast.
Like, it was so quick.
You don't suck at all.
Thanks, bud.
And then it escalates a little later where they get Ned, who works security from their building, to come and pretend he's a security officer for Donor. And Ned likes to make up a lot of stories and has lots of flights of fancy. So it goes from Ned going off script. He's just supposed to say that, you know, people are getting kicked out of Donor because they're all a bunch of fools, and it escalates to this.
Get out of here.
Hey, why did you kick me out? I'm a client at Donor.
We hate our clients here at Donor. You bring your ass back around here, we'll whoop your ass for no reason.
Hey, you shouldn't have to be treated like that.
Yeah, we run Kremlin Duvet, and we always treat our clients with respect and never have our security guard kick them out for no reason.
Well, you don't know what he did.
It doesn't matter what he did.
What'd he do?
I think the point is that he wasn't doing anything, and he kicked him out for no reason because the company's bad.
No reason? The man cut his dick off in the break room.
Too far.
Oh.
Too far, Ned.
Ned, that is unbelievable.
I think there's lots of laughs in this. I don't really buy into the this is overly mean-spirited for this show. The show has actually got a nice mean streak in it. It's sweet and sour, and this might have a little bit more of the sour, but I don't think it's like outside the bounds of of what the show usually does. My problem with this episode is just all the Hark stuff seems plugged in from some other town that's not Detroiters. And that whole part, starting from the car, ending with them leaving Hark Manor, is just falls sort of flat. And I don't think this is a particularly good episode of the Detroiters, but I don't think this is like no neck worthy bad. I think this is just like poor performer. Sarah.
I agree with Dave that I don't think the like sour tone is out of line with the Detroiters brand generally. My issue is twofold. First of all, like I'm fine with the meanness. I laughed at the kid and like that the issue is the word boner, but then everyone is using every other swear. And the mom's like, that's my kid, dickweed. I mean, look, dickweed is funny. You can look that up. But first of all, the jokes, this is like 9 minutes of jokes or like a sketch that each premise got taffy pulled way thinner than it should have been. And it just like individual scenes drag. So that's a problem. And the other problem is like these two, like the world of Detroiters is always like right on the line of unrealistic. Like, would they actually get away with being this unprofessional or doing this much yelling or what have you? And a good Detroiters episode comes right up to that line of like, I don't believe that this meeting could occur, and stops or like goes a couple of feet over the line, but in a way that's really hilarious. And it's like, well, you know, it's a comedy, so I'm not going to worry about it too much. This between like the too slow pacing let you think about like, this just would not continue. Like there's no way that these interactions would happen. And that like whole Phelan Fusk sequence should have been so much funnier. I think I laughed more at like looking at our little rundown doc for the episode. I laughed more at Omar's little like plop in parentheses to note the sound of the car shitting than I did at the car shitting. And like shout out to the prop person who expertly crafted God knows what brownie mix and a sausage casing. Like those were, I mean, maybe they were real poops. I don't need to know the answer to that. Do not at me with the answer. But it's like, for what is this? For, I mean, the South Park joke assessment is dead on. It's not that this is like offensively bad. It's not that I didn't laugh at all, but something is missing. And I just think if they had had more of an episode, like there's just not enough there. And so like every crack is completely magnified, as it were. And it's, you know, it's not that horrible, but it's significantly worse. And they're just like really desperate. Like there's a lot of yelling. There's a lot of face. And you can tell Tim and Sam don't quite buy in to the episode either, and that's like death. So it's just kind of like it's not a fail, it's like a C, but with a show that's usually an A plus that I really like, this is a big gap in quality. So I think it's good for the no-nack.
I wonder if they rewrote the car guy as more of a successful, but like he's successful. He is not at the end of his rope. He's not poor, but he's just removed from all the people that helped him be a success at his prior job. He is now on his own. He sort of is making the Homer car of 2018. If they worked it that way, where he wasn't quite at the end of his rope kind of thing, like it might've been funnier. Like he was more like Elon Musk, but somebody hit him on the side of the head, you know, kind of deal. Like that might've helped, I think, because like the whole part of the Hank Motors, you know, from the moment he jumps in the car through the whole shtick with his girlfriend robot and the house automation and the shitting car, like if they could have rewritten that, I think it would have helped a lot for me anyways, because it just seemed like it was a first thought, then written, then shot.
Yeah, if it has the feel of like something else was thrown out And then they had to like scramble this together.
Yeah.
Because Sarah's right. The pacing is a problem too. Like it does feel very, very, very slow relative to other episodes.
And the other part about that doesn't work is this. Nothing about his mansion looks like he had $200 million at one point. Like it looks like a nice, you know, $500,000, you know, Detroit suburb McMansion. And then like his showroom, literally they brought in the same stuff that you would bring into like a conference booth. You know, he's got that wire mesh stuff you hang everything on. Like it didn't look like. So it was like the set wasn't selling you on the background story for this guy, which is like not really a big deal in the end of it. But it's just kind of funny, like just the set dressing, the budget of the show sort of like denied them that character's true life situation.
He goes with the feeling that it was thrown together.
OK, well, I am ready to put this to a vote. Tara, you start first. What do you say?
I mean, only because like Omar, I love Detroiters so much. I mean, even comparing this to literally any other episode in this season that just ended, like it's such, it feels like a totally other show. So I'm going to vote yes, this is a known act for me.
I don't think this feels like a totally other show. I just feel like it's off and it's definitely not in the same league as the rest of it. I hope they don't make something worse in this episode, but I don't think this is known act worthy. Sarah.
Yes, it's known act worthy. Just the gap alone, like the difference in the best episode and this is just too notable for me to not vote it in. So yes to known act.
All right. So by 2-1 decision. Detroiters season 2 episode 8 Hark Motors, you are hereby inducted into the extra hot great Nodak.
Americans love a winner.
Yup.
And will not tolerate a loser.
Nope.
I'm just laughing at Sarah at this point. Winner and loser of the week. Sarah has her winner if you can manage it. You
oh, need a yes. Moment. No, I'm okay. The winner is me because that never gets old. Just the plaintive, like, anyway, the actual winner is Crafters because Making It, covered on this very program a few weeks ago, has been renewed. Yay!
Yay!
And it really is, I think, the closest that we're going to get here in the States to Great British Bake Off, which I have been like rewatching old seasons just because it's really soothing while knitting. In fact, it's really like wonderful and soothing and not gross and mean like Gordon Ramsay product, which I also watch. And there's a place for that. But I'm pleased that something fundamentally positive in the reality space got renewed.
I would like to see a Great British Bake Off sort of like alternative history where it's one of those incredibly long running British shows. So like there was like wartime seasons of it and like in the 60s and 70s. And you just sort of like, you know, like a fake documentary tracking his progress throughout the years. And you can just have, you know, like what were they making during the recipe card era?
Scone Nation Street.
Yeah. Nice. Who has our loser?
Speaking of first thought, me. Our loser is Roseanne. Once ABC announced that they were going to make a new season of a show called The Conners, which is basically Roseanne minus Roseanne, The speculation was, what is that show going to say happened to the character of Roseanne? And now we have our confirmation. John Goodman has said they are going to kill her off. So no chance she will ever darken the doorway of the Connors. Roseanne going to be dead in that show's universe. So that's kind of unambiguous and yikes. And not that it's not deserved, but still, what a year she's had. My God.
Yeah.
Speaking about good years and other things, do you know what time it is? Get that. Oh. It does like totally build our premise halfway through.
Yeah.
You know, they should call that show Con Airs.
Ah.
Ooh. Saved it.
That's good, Dave.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the eighth game time of the season. If you're thinking, Dave, did you play a game about halfway through and then stop because it wasn't working and now you're doing another game time? You're wrong. This is the original one. The scores are Tara 4, value guess 2, Sarah 1. Tara can win it all with a victory today. Today we are playing America, the World, and Beyond. America, the World, and Beyond from... get this, John Potts, the Potter. Potsy. In America, the World, and Beyond, I'm going to read you the name of a president. You have to tell me what show he's from. All right? That's all there all is right. to it. We're going to go really fast. All right?
Okay. Yep.
In some cases, I will... You know what? I'm going to give you the character and the actor, because, you know, sometimes they're playing real presidents, and you're going to need that information. So, here we go. Are you ready? Picky's going to tell us who's going first.
We will start with Tara.
Tara, Omar, Sarah, here we go. Round one, America, Lex Luthor.
Oh, just saying the show, right? Smallville.
He was president in Smallville. Is that correct, Omar?
In a future, like flash forward, yes.
Oh, scary future with a weird president. Glad that never happened. Charles Logan for Omar.
Demi. That is 24.
Matt Santos. The lawmaker.
Nice.
I get it. Fresh and full of life. West Wing.
Mackenzie Mac Allen.
What was this fucking show called? Mandarin Chief.
Elizabeth Kane.
Can I get the actress?
Elizabeth Marvel.
Oh, crap. President?
Yeah, it's tricky because she had a year where she was presidential in more than one show. That's Homeland.
Meal.
Oh, meal. Too late. I already said it.
All right.
What was it?
Homeland.
Oh, okay.
Claire Underwood.
Oh, is this me?
Yeah.
House of Cards.
Matthew Ellis.
I do not know.
William Sadler, does that help you?
I know who that is, but no.
Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Oh, of course.
Fitzgerald Fitzgrant.
That would be Scandal.
Arthur Winters. Good luck.
actor, please.
Colin Stinton. Good
Doctor Who. I don't know.
Oh my God.
What?
Peace land.
Wow.
Nice.
All right. That was kind of amazing.
What was the actual answer?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Doctor Who.
This is
what?
Asterisk.
Wow.
Presented with an asterisk, but
yeah.
Forward facing. Nathan Petrelli.
Oh, Heroes.
Yes. I think it was Siler or something at the time, but, you know.
Right. Yeah.
He certainly looked like Nathan Petrelli. Mm-hmm. Glenn Tomarcio.
Oh.
Tomarcio.
Can I get the actor?
George Newbern.
The Newbern. Oh, geez. Is it, what's it called? The Kiefer Sutherland bullshit.
The Kiefer Sutherland bullshit.
Kiefer, Kiefer Sutherland bullshit. Designated Survivor. No.
Oh, I see. Yes. No, it was not. It was Jericho. Jericho.
Oh,
Caroline Reynolds.
Caroline Reynolds.
Yeah.
Actor, please.
Patricia Wedick.
Oh, yeah. Shit. Is this Designated Survivor?
Is it going to keep getting that answer until it pops up? That was Prison Break.
Prison Break.
Oh, right.
Olivia Marsden. Olivia Marsden.
Oh, my God. All these broads. Hint.
Linda Carter.
Oh, Supergirl? Okay.
Wow. Nice.
Thomas Tom Kirkman.
Was that Veep?
Nope. But
hey, Cliff. Steel Mill.
Okay.
Designated Survivor.
Yeah.
What?
Womp womp.
Man.
Susan Braden.
Susan Braden.
Yes.
Actor, please.
Lucia Walters. Lucia, probably, I guess.
I don't know. One or the other.
Lucia. Battlestar Galactica?
Legends of Tomorrow presumably also could have accepted Flash and Arrow since it's a shared universe. But.
Right.
Selena Meyer.
Beep.
Conrad Dalton.
I need the actor.
Keith Carradine.
Carradine. I have no idea. I'm not going to get that one.
Steel Meal?
Yep.
I think this is Madam Secretary.
You are correct. Hillary Clinton, played by Teresa Barnwell.
Teresa Barnwell?
Yeah. She Barnes well English.
She Barnes well. Thank you, Yoder. Saturday Night Live.
Sliders.
Whatever.
Abraham Space. Lincoln, played by Hal Holbrook.
Really?
Yep.
I don't know. North and South?
Wow.
Nice.
John F. Kennedy, played by Christopher Phipps.
Phipps?
Yeah, Phipps. Phipps.
Oh, is it that one show? Jack and whatever. Jack and Robert or Jack and...
Jack and Bobby.
Jack and Bobby.
That is 11/22/63.
Oh, right. That
James
thing.
Franco.
Ronald Reagan, played by Bruce Campbell.
Ronald Reagan, played by Bruce Campbell. I really
this
want to say
this.
This
is my boomstick. Yeah, yeah. Uh-huh.
It's my, it's the Genesis video. Just kidding.
Yeah.
Ash versus Evil Dead. I don't know.
Steel Bill from Omar.
Fargo,
correct.
Oh, yeah. Right.
Thomas Jefferson, played by Stephen Delane.
I think this was John Adams, right? John Adams. Okay.
George H.W. Bush, played by Harry Shearer.
Oh, Simpsons?
Sarah, any idea on this one?
No.
George H.W. Bush, Harry Shearer, Golden Girls.
What?
What?
Oh my God.
Last question of the America round. George W. Bush, played by Steve Bridges.
Steve Bridges. Saturday Night Live? I don't know.
I didn't see it, but I can guarantee you he played him navally. NCIS. All right, scores please, Sarah.
Okay. Omar and Sarah are tied with 3 each. I have 9.
Holy shit. All right, guys. Well. Step it in gear. Let's go. Stop fucking around. Now we're into the world. So world leaders, world presidents, emperors, yep. Despots, etc.
Sure.
Harriet Jones, PM.
Harriet. Oh, is this the thick of it? Shit.
Whoa, that is Doctor Who, Doctor Who.
Damn it, I almost said that.
All right. Emperor Augustus, played by Simon Woods.
Oh, geez.
Augustus.
Is that Rome?
Pope Pius the 13th, played by Jude Law.
Papally, the young pope.
Pardon me. Care about the young pope.
Oh, yeah.
The young pope.
Queen Elizabeth II. An exciting sequel to Queen Elizabeth I, Claire Foy.
The Crown.
The Crown. King Louis the 15th. Played by Liner Lingjelzer.
Manfred Jensen.
Some foreigner.
Louis the
Lingjelzer.
Louis the
Lingjelzer. The Kennebunkport Lingjelzens.
Was it Louis the what? The 15th?
Louis the 15th.
It's not Louis.
What if it was?
That gets a Sarah point.
Yeah.
The Tudors?
Outlander.
Oh.
King Louis the 16th. Page by played by George Blagden.
Oh. The Kennebunkport. Just kidding. Is this the Tudors?
No, it's not. That's Versailles.
Uh-uh.
King Alfred the Great.
Hint?
David Dawson.
Never
going to get it.
Okay, I trust you.
Last Kingdom. The Last Kingdom.
Nope, you are correct.
King Ecgbert.
Actor?
Linus Roche.
Oh. Roche.
Roche.
I don't think it's Game of Thrones, but Game of Thrones.
Steel Meal.
Steel Meal.
Oh, so I'll let Sarah get it.
All right,
she has a delay.
Vikings.
Vikings, correct. All
a
right.
Delay on Skype, not a delay in any other way.
Well, maybe.
No.
Sorry, whose question was that?
That was Omar's.
Last question of this round for Sarah. Adolf Hitler, played by Wolf Muser.
The Man in the High Castle?
Yes.
Nice. Done.
All right, scores, please. Tar.
Okay. Closed up a little bit. Omar has 4. Sarah has 6. I have 10.
All right. So, our final round. Here we go. This is And Beyond. Apologies to Sarah. Most of these are set in space, but not all of them.
Okay.
Starting us off, Tara.
Yep.
King Robert Baratheon.
Baratheon?
Baratheon is like his store. Baratheon Bed and Beyondiathon.
Okay. Is this Game of Thrones? And I think it's Baratheon.
Baratheon? Mm-hmm. Sure.
Yeah.
It always just sounds like a fridge company to me. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
When you absolutely need your chicken cold.
Yeah.
Chancellor Martok. Chancellor Martok.
Actor?
J.G. Hertzler.
I'm going to go out on a limb and say Lethal Weapon in a future forward.
What?
Is it Murtok?
Murtok? Martok?
Oh, I get it.
Okay.
That's
never mind.
Star Trek Deep Space Nine.
Oh, close.
President Gaius Baltar.
This is Battlestar Galactica.
It really is.
Chancellor Sheev Palpatine. Played by Tim Curry.
God.
Oh.
I mean, there's so many of those fucking shows. I'm just going to guess Clone Wars.
Nice.
Hey!
Emperor Londo Molari.
Did you say Emperor? Chancellor?
What? Emperor Londo Molari.
What's the
Peter Jurasic.
Shit, I don't know. Like Marco Polo?
Babylon 5.
Babylon Marco Polo 2020.
Okay. Emperor Lur.
Lur.
By Maurice LaMarche. Decent hint if you know who he is.
Mm-hmm.
I don't, so I'm going to guess Next Generation.
Meal. Futurama.
Futurama, correct. You still have steel meals left, Tara? You had a lot.
I'm out of steel meals now.
The big giant head, played by William Shatner.
Oh God. Is this South Park?
That's Third Rock from the Sun.
Oh, sure.
Black Bolt, played by Anson Mount. Is that the guy who's playing Spock?
No.
No, some other guy.
Yeah, Anson Wait. Mount is from
He just got cast in something, that's why I'm confused.
Okay.
Yeah.
Black Bolt?
Black Bolt.
Oh, jeez. Is this Stargate? SG something?
That is Inhumans. Inhumans. King Randor. King Randor. Yeah.
King Randor.
Josh Radnor.
Eric Gundon is the talent involved.
Gundon. King Rad.
I'm going to say you're never going to get this, but you pulled Doctor Who out of your ass, so who knows?
Xena.
That's He-Man and the Masters of the Universe.
Oh, you're I was so close.
Queen Rhea Largan.
Oh,
I see what they're doing here. Okay. Queen Rhea Largan. Okay. The actor might be a good hint here.
Okay.
Terry Hatcher.
Oh. Is this Smallville?
Close. Yeah. Supergirl. Okay.
Damn it.
Emperor Stalik. Duncan Young plays Emperor Stalik.
Oh, is this Stargate?
No, it's the other one. It's Farscape.
Oh.
Damn it.
Space.
Audria the Orriki.
Actor, please.
Marina Baccarin.
Oh.
V?
That's what? Stargate.
Damn it!
She was in Stargate?
Yeah, apparently.
Why are you Stargate? Why?
And the other one, Firefly.
Yeah. All right, Scott, okay. Scores, please.
Omar has 4 points. Sarah has 7 points. I have 13.
All right, that's it. So Tara wins, but I do have a tiebreaker here.
Yay!
Let's see here. The following characters have all been president on which show? Shout out when you know the answer. All right. Anybody want to shout out before I start reading?
24.
Yeah!
Hey!
Palmer!
Well done.
Palmer.
Tara.
Harry
Tara.
Barnes. You got your John Logan. Keeler.
So many.
You got your Hal Gardner. You got your Allison Taylor. Your James Heller. Your Wayne Palmer. Your Charles Logans. And David Jones, Palmer. Yeah. All right, guys. That is it for another episode of Extra Hot. Great. We drew our conclusions about the first season of Disenchantment before going around the dial with stops at To All the Boys I've Loved Before, Comedians in Cars, Getting Coffee, and various below Dexuses. Omar made the successful pitch for Detroiters Hark Motors to be in the no-neck. We crowned winners and losers of the week, and Tara was a winner. Oh my goodness, Tara, you won the season, and we've got to play your victory music. Here we go, Tara. Get your ass ready.
History repeats itself. Try and you succeed. You're the best around. Nothing's gonna ever keep you down.
Yeah. Don't get a hot head, Tara. You won.
All right. Good at winning games, bad at keeping frescas on my desk as I wipe it up from my carpet. Please continue, Dave.
Oh, dear. Remember, guys.
We're listening.
I am David T. Cole on behalf of Tara Ariano.
It's a big citrus mess.
Sarah D. Bunting.
Get out, praiser.
And Omar Gallego.
My name's Alpha. I'm an elf.
Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time right here on Extra Hot. Great.
Jeez.
Hey, it's the Suck Twins. How's the sucking been?
You're the one who sucks!
Oh, shit! My dude! My dude! Burn, asshole!
This has been a production of the Previously.tv Podcast Network.